There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, I wish I had the freedom of a European listening to electronic dance music loudly in his convertible.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
So much freedom.
Ultimate freedom. The convertible and the music.
Oi, oi, oi. And just going to have like a neon yellow polo on and my weird sunglasses that are shaped like Z's.
I love
somehow.
It.
Somehow.
Triangle shoes. Have a good time with it. Why not? Welcome to the last podcast on the left, everyone. I am Ben Kissel with Marcus Parks.
Hey.
And we have Hollywood Henry Zebrowski out there. How you doing, buddy?
I am clean. I cannot take the name Hollywood Henry Zebrowski anymore.
Why
because
not?
Hollywood's a dirty city filled with secrets, and I am transparent. I have no secrets. Everything you need to know about me is at your will. I love burritos.
All right.
I love weed. I love different types of graphic tees. And I love Spring-Heeled Jack coffee, which
wow.
I actually had several pots of so far. And it is very good.
Good plug. Poughkeepsie Henry Zebrowski. All right, we're on to part two. This is going to be the last episode on this guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
This maniac, Robert Hansen. We're going back to Alaska. This guy, you know what I'm going to call him? He's a stooge.
Stooge
That's
is a really good way of putting
me
it.
A stooge.
Yeah, I do the Norm Macdonald. He's a real jerk.
He is a real jerk.
So on our first episode, we began with an exaggerated true crime narration of the final day of Robert Hansen's serial killing career. But on this episode, we're going to tell the truth best as we can from the information available to us.
We're going to do that thing we've been trying to do all along.
I think that it's important to remember that a lot of times when you get information, it's been trumped up to entertain you, and we're not trying to entertain you today.
No. If you for a moment feel entertained, we've done something wrong.
I didn't want you to have that experience. What we want you to do, technically we're going to be popping some bubbles today, and I know that it's not supposed to be fun. The rumors about Robert Hansen are not technically fun.
They are not fun.
They're not fun. But we are going to pop these bubbles a little bit because he's not quite as evil as he seems.
And that's fun.
Yeah. Now, one of the things we're going to find out in the conclusion of this series is that the mass media true crime journalism version of Robert Hansen is full of half-truths, assumptions, and gross truncations.
Okay.
No! Whoa, wait a second. Can we be sued for libel if you say the word gross truncations?
Yeah, it sounds like a weird disease.
But that's how a lot of these serial killer stories are. Now, it's not that the Robert Hansen story isn't a good one. It is. It's just not movie good.
Oh. According to the movie The Frozen Ground, which we know that for a fact now.
Yes, they did, however. That didn't stop them from making a movie.
Now, there will be speculation today, but when we do engage, we're going to make sure you know what it is that we're doing. We're going to make sure you know that's what we're doing. Now, when Hansen said that when he started going out and picking up women, he never actually intended to kill them. And
air quotes.
Air quotes.
In fact, quotes. He said it was never the plan to kill any of these women ever, even while his body count was rising. His excuse for everything was that he'd only kill his victims if they didn't do exactly what he wanted them to do. If things didn't go according to Hansen's fantasy, then that's when things would go south. And this is extremely common among serial killers, specifically ones who prey on sex workers. In order for them to feel okay with what they do, because they do know the difference between right and wrong. Robert Hansen himself said he knew the difference between right and wrong.
Oh, yeah.
These guys have to essentially create a betrayal that needs to be avenged.
You know, that is one thing about bakers. They know the difference between good and bad.
They do, because one's got a soggy bottom and one has a crisp.
A break to it. Oh, you could taste the letters of butter that was put into it because it must be cold when you fold the butter.
I'm sorry, being Mary Berry.
I love that.
If you want to do yourself a terrible favor and go through the incels world, which I found myself into a deep, deep hole in, you're going to see that that's actually a very common thing. This idea of creating a, the world is out to get me. This is
right.
I create all the reasons why I am a terrible person. And that's kind of what he did. He built this whole story, like what they talk about with the white knights and incels and the concept of the black pill.
The incels, those are people, they're virgins, right?
Involuntarily celibate. That's what incel stands for. Yeah.
Okay. It's a sad world. I stumbled on it for about 5 minutes, and then I quickly jumped off of it.
Hanseth said that throughout his active period, which spanned over a decade, he took over 50 women out into the Alaskan wilderness, and of those 50, 17 committed his version of a betrayal and were murdered. And you might think that because of this, women in the trade would have started talking to each other about the crater face with a stutter. Don't go with that guy.
Right.
But you got to remember, Robert Picton, who racked up a body count more than twice the size of Hansen's over a much longer period of time, was well known in the Vancouver scene as someone who tended to be around when girls disappeared. And yet, women still went with him.
Mm. Well, you know what it is? There's a lot of losers that are out there hanging around with the sex workers. There are a lot of weird guys with facial tics or burns or like backwards feet, like guys that have like had bad lives. It's like, so they show up, and a lot of times they're often very vulnerable, and they show up to speak with sex workers. And so they know, it's just like, well, this guy is kind of weird, but he's not dangerous weird. And he would appear, Robert Hansen would appear different to each woman, because a part of it was the way he attracted them, the way he would build a story around them, and depending on whether or not they were giving into his weird romantic plot that he felt that he was a part of. Because sometimes people can read that instinctively in somebody, I believe. It's like with Robert Hansen, they saw like, oh, this is his whole thing. He's going to pretend like this is a girlfriend, boyfriend thing, and I'm just going to take money without mentioning it, and they get away with it. And I imagine that's actually very attractive, where it's like this guy, it's like, well, essentially you can milk this fucking idiot for a bunch of money if you play his weird interior game.
I'm just thinking about a guy with backwards feet, just sort of one tear in his eye, just being like, I'm a good person. Why'd you malign? Why am I being thrown in with all of these other people? I just have backwards feet.
I wanted to look into the haunted mirror. It was put into my Airbnb by the owner.
Poor guy. If you're out there with backwards feet, we support you.
Of course.
You're a good person.
Now, in Anchorage, things were even worse than they were in a place like Vancouver because of the higher turnover in talent. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if these strip clubs had a completely new dancing roster every 6 months. Mm. And plus, there were a hell of a lot of strip clubs for a town as small as Anchorage. It was about like 150,000 people.
It sounds like a great time. It sounds like Kissel, you'd become mayor in like 6 weeks.
Maybe. Yeah. A place for a cold bachelor party.
Besides the strip clubs we mentioned last week, there were still others like the Wild Cherry Club, Good Times, and the worst name for a strip club I've ever heard, Murphy's Law.
Well, that's good, because a lot of those people are studying to become lawyers, and that's true.
Yeah, that is true. Murphy's Law, at least it sets your expectations low.
That's anything that can go wrong will go wrong. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
No kidding. That is the worst name possible. By the way, in Sheboygan true crime news, they haven't arrested the person who was stuffing 20-ounce cans of Pepsi down women's toilets, but they are looking for him.
What is this?
That's a Sheboygan true crime story. I don't know if we'll keep that in or not, but that is happening right now. Austin, they found the bomber. Uh-huh. They have not found the toilet stuffer yet in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. So I've been catching up on my Sheboygan, Wisconsin news.
Now, in addition to the prevalence of strip clubs and the high turnover, Hansen was extremely careful when it came to his behavior within city limits. Now, he may have had a low IQ, but like Gary Ridgway, Hansen's intelligence didn't necessarily translate to standardized tests.
Oh, they don't standardize tests hunting and killing sex workers in the woods.
No. That's just the standardized test comes from if you go in a person's house and it looks like a place where, like, if an antelope walked into your living room, it would be violently scared. Like, it has to be filled with trophies.
Robert Hansen had a full array of disguises, complete with skin adhesives, nail polish, and a fake mustache. But the funny thing was, it seems like Hansen mostly used the disguises to bolster his self-esteem.
Oh, my goodness.
The best part about this is that when I put on the mustache, I could be anybody. Look, I'm the guy from Cheers. Now mustache is off. I'm back to being old stupid Robert.
Put it back on, Robert.
Oh, I'm the funny guy from Cheers.
Yes,
again.
You are.
Now, the disguises did serve the purpose of hiding his identity, but Hansen also had this to say about his fake mustache.
Well, I'm not the most handsome guy in the world. I thought it would be easier. As a matter of fact, I even tried to grow one for a while. I could never grow one. I look like a tiny dog when I grow one. I got no middle part. Oh. And everyone knows the middle part's the strongest part because, oh, the great Adolf Hitler had such a thick middle part.
He did. He had the old reverse Chaplin going on, huh?
Now, while that may be a little goofy, Hansen was actually smart in that he never used overly ostentatious outfits to disguise himself.
Just the mustache.
It's very difficult to go out and all the girls are like, hey, you may want to avoid the guy dressed as Dora the Explorer that shows up in the Jeep.
You want to come on an adventure with me? Hola! We're going to look at El Mapo and we're going to go all over the world learning about Spanish and my tiny backpack. Nothing to see here.
Nothing at all. So he's looking like a Tony Clifton type.
Well, no, he would just always dress as something boring. Like he would say he was a doctor, or a lawyer, or a photographer, or something like that. He'd put on like suits and things like that. They would make him look somewhat different each time, right, but still nondescript, like a spy. You know, that's what they say about spies, is that spies are the most boring people you could possibly imagine because they kind of just fade into the background.
They can't tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But he's the town baker of 150,000 folks. Mm-hmm. He is the baker.
Yeah.
Is it like a Superman situation where it's like there's no way he's got glasses on?
Well, that actually comes into play later.
Oh. Okay.
Now, Hansen's game was to meet girls in the topless joints, then offer them large sums of money for either nude photography or, quote-unquote, lunch.
It probably was lunch, Marcus.
Maybe.
Like, I know it's like, honestly, I know you're saying quote-unquote lunch, but it's not like they sat down with plates and pretended to eat sandwiches. They may have actually gone to lunch.
I don't know.
Well, he'd then make a date where they'd meet again outside of the club, usually at the local Wendy's.
That's lunch.
That's lunch.
Now, was it a Wendy's with the buffet? Do you remember the short-lived Wendy's buffet?
No. Well, these are the old-school Wendy's, too, back when Wendy's was a restaurant. When you'd go and they'd come to your table. Do you remember?
I remember that, yes.
When you'd go and the family would go and it had oak. There was, like, oak tables and they had the little plush booths. So it was nice. This was a nice lunch.
The square patties really did elevate.
Yeah.
It really elevated the meal.
Yeah.
You thought you were eating an experience, not just a burger.
And now it's just chili made out of old patties.
Yep. I used to work there.
Yum, yum, yum. You're saying it like it's bad. I like old patties. I don't mind chili made out of old patties. That's what we do in the...
But how do you like it out of a cup?
Whatever, you know. In the end, I mean, I like chili. I'm very surprised you'd be so upset about chili because it seemed, Marcus, that you would be down to whatever chili you could get.
For those that don't know, when I worked at Wendy's, I found out it's the leftover patty, not legal to sell as a burger, legal to sell in chili. So that's what they use in. Yes, exactly.
All right, Henry, I got to admit, I am kind of putting on airs here a little bit.
Oh, everyone loves chili. Yeah. No one believes that you don't like chili, Marcus. You're like the definition of a chili guy.
Hansen would get to the Wendy's early and keep his car parked outside and watch the girl arrive, always making sure she was alone. And if she wasn't, he'd call the whole thing off and hightail it out of there. But if the girl came alone, Hansen would set the trap.
I will say that's a part of, I believe, his MO, is that it seemed like he tracked them for a long time.
Yeah.
It seemed that the way he would pick them to even get to lunch, which was big for him. That was like step five was lunch, because he didn't want to spend money on anything. And so finally having to have him settle down, spend some money was a big deal. And so he would watch them from the club when he'd meet them and see who they were hanging out with and see if they had a lot of friends. He liked newcomers. He liked people that just got in town, because then he knew that they didn't have many connections and would go missing more easily.
Is that what that song is all about? They talk about the party. and then there's a post party, an after party, and then they go to Wendy's. Is that what that's all about?
What?
After the party, there's the after party, and then we go to Wendy's.
Is this a Joe Walsh song? Is that what this is?
No, that is a very popular lyric in a quite successful song.
I don't know, man. It sounds like the B-side to Rocky Mountain High.
After the party, there is an after party, then we go to Wendy's.
All right.
That's my song, and I'm singing to it.
All right.
All right. I'm on fire.
No, we know that Hansen didn't just pull a gun in the middle of Wendy's, but most likely after lunch or dinner or whatever, Hansen would offer to take the woman to a second location, ostensibly where the photography would take place.
The Arby's, which has a nice back wall, like a brick wall that serves as a neutral background.
Arby's was legitimately fancy.
Yeah?
Yes. No, it was.
Arby's was legitimately fancy.
I don't think so.
I recall a table.
Oh, you mean the Market Fresh sandwiches?
No. This is way before they sold out and went, No, I'm talking the 90s Arby's.
KFC was legit fancy back in the day.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on what family you're from.
Waiters used to come and bring the chicken to your table.
Yeah.
At Wendy's, you'd get a number and you'd sit. What kind of quality are we expecting? Now we're getting served by kiosks and 16-year-olds and 59-year-olds with horrible pass. Like, no. I want a fresh burger that's delivered to me with someone on roller skates.
Oh.
Well, after they went to the second location, or at least Hansen told them that they were going to the second location, once the woman was in the car, the gun would come out and it was off to the wilderness. 3 months after Joanna Messina disappeared, Lisa Futrell followed. But after that, it was a full year before Hansen would take another victim. See, at this point, Hansen was still in the stop-and-go stage of his killing. He hadn't yet reached the point of full addiction, where more brutal kills were needed more often to feed the need. But he was starting to give himself allowances, and those allowances were what made him evolve as a killer. Hansen said the girls would stay alive until they panicked, but the longer he went on, the more he kept putting victims in situations where panic was inevitable.
I thought you were going to say by giving himself allowances, he got the double patty, and then he would also get,
no,
he would
also get
the Wendy's nuggets.
It's not about Wendy's.
Which is quite, I have to stop thinking about Wendy's.
That's all you're thinking about.
I'm sorry.
That's what you've been thinking about since Wendy's was uttered. You
were
going through menu items in your head.
Remember a French fry would fall into the nuggets, and you get a little French fry, and then you feel like you're stealing
some.
It's
very tasty, and it's a welcome surprise, but it's got nothing to do with the story.
Anytime you mix a French fry in anything that's not supposed to be there, oh, that's a good one. That's a good fry.
You're a pervert. That makes you a fast food pervert.
Well, as far as an example goes with Hansen putting a victim into a situation where panic was inevitable, let's look at the case of Sherry Morrow. The night before Sherry disappeared, she had told a friend of hers that a stranger had offered her $300 for an erotic photo shoot. Now, that was big money in 70s Anchorage, so Sherry decided to do it. The next thing she knew, she was in the passenger seat of Robert Hansen's Subaru, riding up to Pioneer Peak along the Kinnick River to an abandoned lean-to with an ace bandage wrapped around her eyes.
Now, for some reason, the ace bandage wrapped around it, because that comes up quite a bit. It reminds me of David Bowie from the Black Star video.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's, I kept thinking about that, too. It's creepy imagery.
Yeah. Did you watch that doc yet? The last 5 years, the final 5 years of David Bowie? Great documentary. You got to check it out.
Lovely man. Wonderful shoes, I've heard. I've also heard that David Bowie smelled very good. I had a friend that worked with him on his final musical.
Really? Okay.
What did he smell like?
Wonderful cologne, and that he was always very fun and just easygoing, and he'd smoke a long cigarette, and he always had colorful sneakers.
That seemed to be the guy. Yeah. He was much nicer than I expected.
I love Bowie. Now, the reason Hansen gave for the ace bandage, and this actually makes sense and kind of points towards Hansen telling the truth in some cases, is that Hansen had planned to use that spot again, and if Morrow happened to go to the cops afterwards, she could take them to that location which would give Hansen less squirm room. Mm.
But that was also him lying to himself. That this is a thing with Hansen, is that his compartmentalizing was so deep because he would say shit like this, acting as if, I always intended for them to live. I always thought that this was all going to be a foregone conclusion. We were going to go out there. We were going to have sex. I never wanted to murder them. I'm always putting the blame on them. Right. They are the reason why I'm killing them, because they're not following my rules. The Ace Bandage, it sounds like a very clean cut observation to say I wanted to use the same space, but it's about control. It's about his sexual drive to have total. He can't tell them whatever he wants to do, and he uses them like dolls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, even if she did get away and go to the police, it was just her word against his. And Hansen had already been taught by the Anchorage Police Department that the word of a sex worker didn't mean jack shit to them. And most likely, the girls he took up there and brought back knew that too. Mm. But on this trip, things did not go according to Hansen's plan. Hansen got stuck again, and Sherry Morrow took the opportunity and ran out blind with her hands tied into the wilderness. Hansen caught up to her, and the way he told it, this murder was done in the same casual manner that you or I would just point a finger. He said he was sitting down, staring at her, screaming. So he just pointed the gun and pulled the trigger. Just thought, well, that's it. I'm done with this one.
Jeez.
But the Sherry Morrow murder is where Hansen had a couple of actual slip-ups. And remember, Hansen was a hunter. And there's nothing a hunter like Hansen loves more than a trophy. But mutilation wasn't really Hansen's game. He didn't take the kinds of trophies that, like, Ed Kemper did.
But it's interesting, but his house still was covered in animal heads. So right. There was a point where he was fine with butchering these animals and chopping the heads off of them and doing all this shit. Because his house was like in the movie Frozen Ground. It looked just like that with all the different menagerie. It was like from Ace Ventura when nature calls.
Yeah.
It's that guy.
I've never understood. There's nothing relaxing to me about a bunch of animal heads staring at me as I watch Home Improvement. Yeah. However, when I die, I do demand to be stuffed and placed into one of your homes for 10 years and another one of your homes for another 10 years and just go back and forth.
Oh, I'm fine with that. And you're going to have your eyes replaced with light up eyes that I'm putting you in the backyard. And
that will be true. That's okay.
Basically, what I'll use it to sit, to terrify my future adopted children, who will be Asian, and I will tell them that they are just very, very Polish until they grow up to learn that is incorrect. Okay. I will say that every time that they're wrong, every time that they do something bad, I was like, well, you don't want Shadow Ben to come and get you in your sleep. And they're like, where's Shadow Ben, Daddy? And then I go and I turn on your eye lights, and it's you just standing out in the backyard.
Okay, well, you know, that's fair use, I guess.
Well, Hansen was far too squeamish to take any sort of physical trophy from his victims, especially considering how he had used guns for all the murders but the first one. And as John Douglas points out, you know, he can't really mount a woman's head on the wall of his rumpus room.
Not in this economy.
But Hansen still had to have something, so he ended up taking jewelry and IDs as a way to relive the crimes and to prove to himself that he'd actually done it and that he'd, you know, somehow accomplished something. Ugh. Just by the sheer act of killing.
What an idiot.
Now, from Sherry Morrow, Hansen took a distinctive golden arrowhead necklace, and that would be one of the things that would help put Hansen behind bars for the rest of his natural life.
Well, that's the thing. He's literally just, he's like, how many things can I take that connect me to this murder?
Yeah.
It's so stupid, but it's...
And the way he hid them, too, were pretty boneheaded, but it's very common. It's a look at this. You go to vacation. When I go on vacation, I'll take, like, a rock.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like, from where we are, because it's fun to have the memory.
I could just see you taping up a huge W from the Wendy's that you stopped at, that you stole from the sign. Like, get in the car, let's go.
This is my memory.
Yeah, BTK was well known have like a little box with all of his mementos. Didn't he keep it in like his kid's treehouse?
He'd
climb up there and look at it every once in a while?
I think that's right.
Yeah, and like these guys would cross those boundaries all the time. Like Hansen would sometimes give the jewelry that he took off his victims to his wife and daughter.
Oh,
that's also very common, but it's about control. Mm-hmm. It's again, I have this whole secret world of wealth. wealth and knowledge from experiences that other people don't understand. It's the realm of the serial killer where they begin to feel that they are past human being because they're like, I've been to the edge and saw it, and now I have a little tinker toy that reminds me of it every single time.
That's why every time I give a gift of jewelry, I forward on the email receipt. Let them know I bought it from Verameat right here in Brooklyn, New York.
That is very rude.
Yes, that would be actually very, very rude. Yes, do that.
I love Verameat.
I bought them all out. I bought all the good jewelry out, but that's okay.
Now, the other slip-up on the Sherry Morrow scene is somewhat of a rookie mistake in the world of a murderer, but something that's completely normal in the world of the hunter, even if it is a bad habit. Hansen had buried Morrow in a shallow gravel pit grave on pretty much the same spot where he'd fired the fatal shot with his rifle. Now, a lot of hunters don't pick up their bullet shells when they're out hunting, especially when they're on the move. With a lot of them, they don't even think about it, and Hansen was exactly that type of hunter. That habit of just leaving the shells where they lay was the one thing that linked Hansen to the different crime scenes even before he was caught.
Is that true? Like, is it just common that they leave the bullet shells, and that, like, are they supposed to pick them up? Like, are there rules for hunting where you're supposed to pick up that kind of litter?
I don't know about that.
It's, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I'm saying that from my own personal experience.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're kind of, like, it's kind of a weird thing where if you're using, like, metal casings, it's kind of like an unspoken thing that you can kind of leave metal casings wherever. But if you're using like plastic shotgun shells, you generally don't want to leave those just lying around anywhere because it's ugly. You know, you're uglying up and littering the your hunting ground. If you want to keep it nice and pretty, then you pick up your shit.
You are allowed to leave all of the Coors Lights that you drink on the floor, though. You can keep every can around, just so you know where to go back to.
But I just feel like crows use whatever shit it is they find to build a nest, and it's got to make all these crazy looking Mad Max fucking bird nests made out of bullet casings and shit. That's gotta scare cats.
I was just thinking about that the other day.
What?
How birds use new stuff for their homes. It's nice houses. They have windows now.
You were just
now.
Thinking about that the other day.
I really was.
You were just sitting on a park bench somewhere, staring off into space, thinking about bird nests.
No, I was walking and I saw one of those cigarette, you know, the cellophane that goes around. I saw that on the ground and I said, huh, a bird could use that for their nest. It's like a little window.
Yeah, garbage. Pick it up, Kissel.
No, well, I didn't. But I did think, oh, a bird could grab that and use that for a window. And I thought how interesting that was.
Yeah, because you probably learned that from Planet Earth, too, right?
Maybe.
From the Cities episode.
That's right.
Yes, that's true. Do you keep these thoughts in the front of your brain so that the dark soup that's like behind all of it like doesn't come forward to the nose and the mouth?
No, it's kind of like it's a mix. It's a wintry mix.
So, concerning the shell casings, when Morrow's body was found almost a year later, cops had a .223 caliber shell casing as their first real piece of evidence, and the casings were marked in such a way that they knew they could positively match it to whatever gun fired it. All they had to do was find the gun. But between just the time that Sherry Morrow was killed and the time that she was found, Hansen claimed 3 more victims. Ugh. But when Sherry was found, that's when the official investigation finally began.
How long has this been going on?
Few years.
Oh my! So they're just beginning to look into it.
Well, they haven't been finding any of the bodies. Okay. They've at that point, the only body that they'd found was Eklutna Annie, the one who had been
Eklutna.
Okay. No, we are learning. That wasn't even a bad email we got from an Alaskan listener. Thank you for your help.
I am interested in Alaskan names, and I'm interested in Alaskan heritage. I had some of that smoked salmon vodka. It was pretty damn good.
Yeah,
it's really good in a Bloody Mary. I also got this book, Strange Stories of Alaska and the Yukon, and I got. I say there's one thing that they should have been scared out in the wilderness was Jacko the Sasquatch boy. He was out there.
And we do have proof that Henry has the book because once again he has shown us, despite the fact it's a podcast. But there it is. There is the book. I would love to go to Alaska. We got to do it.
Actually, someone did get a hold of me that, you know, out of Juneau that said they got some contacts in Anchorage.
Hey, all right. There we go.
Well, the body of Eklutna Annie had been found stabbed to death a couple of years before by a road crew, but the state troopers who were in charge of that investigation had hoped that it was a one-off because they didn't have any evidence there. Not really.
Right.
But now,
we've the detective just be like, well, with any luck, it's a one-off.
Yeah.
And they said, well, investigate the one-off.
I mean, we all know how hard it is.
Is it possible she just fell?
on a knife like 95 times. Can we just say that? It's cold as fuck is out here, and I'm pretty certain I heard, what's that? Is that Jacko the Sasquatch boy? We gotta get the hell out of here.
We gotta know more about that guy, but...
Well, I'm definitely not going to blame the troopers on not solving the case of Clutina Annie, because, as we know, a serial killing is by far the hardest murder to solve because there's no connection.
Right.
You know, and usually that's how cops solve crimes, through connections. It's not, you know, the whole CSI effect thing that makes us think that, you know, murders are always solved through fingerprints or DNA or something like that.
Right.
It's usually not like that. It's usually just a connection that... the victim happens to have with the murderer.
Well, also, you have to bring several layers of the government together to investigate a serial killer murders, which we're going to see happens here. And also, at this point, they still believe in the whole drifter theory, that all these girls go in and out of town. When people go missing, they just moved on. Mm-hmm. They have no real consideration, only because it's happened so much before that they view this as, well, this was obviously something that went wrong. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. But now, with two bodies found buried in shallow graves, the troopers' thoughts turn to serial murder. Mm. Now, like it was with a lot of cases in those days, late 70s, early 80s, especially on the West Coast, the cops thought about folding the investigation into the still unsolved Green River murders perpetrated by the still unknown Gary Ridgway.
Wow.
However, since the body was found in such a remote, out-of-the-way location, the troopers figured it had to be a local. And that local was about to obtain a position that would give his story the extra juice it needed to be the subject of a terrible movie starring Nicolas Cage and John Cusack.
The Frozen Ground.
Produced by 50 Cent.
Really? 50 produced that, huh?
Uh-huh.
God. Even by Nicolas Cage standards, it seemed as if he just did that entire movie over the speakerphone. He just phoned that thing, and I love Nick Cage.
Yeah, we all do.
But
Nick Cage is one of my favorite actors of all time. He could do anything that he wants.
Yes.
He's so bored by his own talent. I'm going to put it this way. He's so bored by his
own
abilities.
He doesn't even use it.
He doesn't even use it. And so when he was doing that movie, he was technically trying to be understated, but I think he was just hammered. And
yes.
Also, disappointingly flat in Drive Angry, which is like another movie where he really could have let go. But he solves all of his problems in the new movie Mom and Dad. He's very fucking good.
Oh, yeah. I loved Mom and Dad. We've mentioned that before, I think, on the show. Great new horror movie out there. You can tell when Nicolas Cage, when tax season's around. Because the movies become like... Yes, I will accept this role, and I will not try it all. I mean, he is in an immense amount of debt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think he spent something like $125,000 on an Action Comics number one.
He's a cool guy.
He's living our dream us.
I love him.
Yeah, and he spent all that money buying the most haunted house in New Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
cool
awesome.
Guy.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
What do you think I'm going to do if I ever had millions of dollars?
Oh, my God.
It'd
wait,
be gone in a second.
Yeah.
I'd be having, like, an actual helicopter hat that would, like, attach to my shoulders and be like, look, guys, I can fly anywhere. Then all of a sudden it just paralyzes me, and I just have to float everywhere with my fucking helicopter hat.
I'm going to buy a Volkswagen Baja Beetle.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Yeah, it's a dream. It's a goal.
That's very cool. A beach towel. I want a big beach towel.
Now, near the end of Robert Hansen's killing spree, he perpetrated an insurance scam involving some of his hunting trophies. He told his insurance company that someone had jimmied his door and made off with a bunch of his heads. And of course, it was Hansen himself who'd remove them all from his basement and pretty much just stored them in his backyard.
Yeah, but I put my mustache on, so it was like I was another more handsome burglar.
The insurance company believed him and gave him a payout of $13,000.
Oh, my
God.
For these
for just a bunch of heads?
Oh. Taxidermy is a very expensive. It's a very lucrative business. I mean, it's extremely expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually value these heads at a pretty high price.
Okay.
Now, it's with that money that Robert Hansen was able to buy his very own private Super Cub airplane, the object that to this day made Robert Hansen Alaska's very own tiny little boogeyman.
Okay.
And the murder wasn't the only crime Hansen committed with his aircraft. damn near as soon as he got it. He set off burgling as many remote cabins as he could find, stealing things like generators, radios, and of course, more chainsaws.
Like, I just see this sort of like this giddy thing where he's just running through all these cabins, getting to steal as much as he can. Because we also remember the last episode when he said what he felt like when he was stealing. He felt like he was going to come in his pants.
Yeah.
So you have a man who is orgasming constantly, stealing and stuff, and flying a plane around. He's like John Travolta.
I mean, it's crazy. Maybe this is what happens to Harrison Ford when he crashes all of his planes. Maybe he's out there burgling. So this guy he seems like he has zero control. And may I ask, when does he bake? When does the baking
happen?
Yeah,
where's the baking happen?
He is so busy stealing and killing. When's he making muffins?
But Hansen did indeed use that plane for murder. Now, from what I can surmise, the first woman taken out into the wilderness in Hansen's craft was probably Teresa Watson, who disappeared on March 25th, 1983, although we don't know that for sure. But here is where we can really get into the specifics of the long-held claims that Hansen hunted women. First of all, Hansen never said he hunted women, and the forensics don't really show that he did either. The closest thing they had forensics-wise was that his last known victim, Paula Goulding, had been killed by a single gunshot wound to the heart. However, I think that actually serves to argue against Hansen hunting them, at least on purpose. See, Hansen's favorite hunting weapon was, according to his hunting records, the crossbow. He hunted with guns sometimes, yes, but when it came to serious hunting, Hansen liked archery. If Hansen truly was hunting these women in the same way he would hunt an animal, he probably would have used something he was more comfortable with. But, on the other hand, he may have just not wanted to take the chance with something less deadly than a Mini 14.
That's what I think it is. I think a part of it, there's two things here. I don't think he actually hunted these women. The reason why they jumped to it is because he left the bullets behind like a hunter would. So he showed they saw a pattern of behavior like a hunter would do, but they were not deep into the woods. It wasn't like they were covered in scratch. A lot of times they were so decomposed that by the time they had found them, they weren't really sure what were the actions that led up to their death. And also, a crossbow is not nearly as intimidating as a gun.
Yeah.
In terms of the actual, I mean, sure it is. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not. I wouldn't be scared. If a man walked in the apartment.
Tell Jason Voorhees that, yes. Mr. Zabrowski.
But I feel like a gun is more immediately controlling.
Yeah.
And that's why he had it. And it's an easier way to dispatch somebody when you're trying to basically get it over with.
Isn't it also just an issue of convenience? I mean, you can't really have a crossbow at someone's head while you're driving a car or a plane.
That is true. But even so, he could have had because he had a handgun that he would use to take him out into the wilderness or to his plane. But then it could also, and he also said that there were multiple times when women almost got their hands on the guns.
Right.
And he just barely got it away from him. It could go either way. But the thing was, like Henry said, these women weren't covered with scratches from running through branches or anything like that. There was no blood trails found or anything in Hansen. Didn't speak about hunting.
Are you telling me
all.
That the media might have made something up for a story?
I've never heard of that before.
Never
but
heard
honestly,
of that.
I think in this time period, yes, I think that is the case.
Well, most likely, Robert Hansen's murders looked more like this. He took his victims into the wilderness and told them that as long as they stayed calm and played along, they wouldn't get hurt. But of course, when you've got an insane nerd pointing a gun in your face while you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're not going to be likely to believe him.
No kidding.
And I'd imagine it'd be damn hard to suppress your flight instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hansen would force his victims into a terrifying situation, and then when that terror overwhelmed them, they would run. And that's when he would shoot them, convincing himself that it was their fault that they ran. Now, he never told a story about stalking a woman or following a blood trail or anything like that. It was a game for Hansen, yes, but as far as comparisons to General Zaroff go, it was pretty much just the disdain for their victims that they shared. This was not a most dangerous game type of situation.
Okay. No, because when I originally heard this story, I imagined him owning land and it being some crazy shit. But it seems like it was all kind of about convenience and control. And I agree with you, Marcus, setting up the circumstances. passes where then the crime was out of his hands.
So this is a rare situation where the more research that has been done, the more boring the case almost in a strange way, right?
Same thing with Pee Wee Gaskins. It's like, I feel like we got the tiniest bit of pushback by people saying, well, the story isn't real. What does it matter? But a part of it's about the,
yeah,
the what is wrapped into the myth of a serial killer. And when you look at it, what, yeah, what we hope to do, I think us are sadly most intelligent, which is to say, mm, you can't always believe in these urban myths, because a, right, lot of times it's people trying to make you scared so that you spend more money.
Yeah, of course. But of course, on the opposite of that, Robert Picton was quite surprising. It, yes, seemed like he, yes, actually fed people human meat.
Yeah,
which that should be a little bit more known.
Yeah, some of these guys are much scarier than you think they are. But for the most part, it is modern myth making.
Hmm.
You know, it's these true crime shows and even like true crime novelists. Like the true crime industry is predicated upon fear.
Right,
and that I think is completely bullshit.
Speaking of fear, I did just get my subscription to NRA TV. So, guys, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm going to change from here on. No, I did not.
That was a problem. I was trying to watch some, and you can't. It's all behind a paywall.
Exactly. No, I don't want. I will never pay to watch Dana Loesch scream at me.
Well, speaking of the bullshit, you know, even the whole story of Hansen taking these girls by plane to his cabin in the woods is a little off. Mm. Although, in this case, I think, setting-wise, this is actually more terrifying. The so-called cabin was actually just a meat shack next to a frame for a tent cabin where hunters would hang moose meat. Ooh. So it could cool down, and hanging it in the meat shack also kept the flies away. So, all in all, we think Hansen only used the airplane 3 times in the course of his murders, if that. But it was on the 4th airplane trip that Hansen once again underestimated one of his victims. But on the other hand, as we'll see, this last victim once again came damn close to getting no justice, just like all the others. So on June 11th, 1983, Hansen propositioned a girl working the streets on 5th and Denali named Cindy Paulson. Hansen offered her $200 for oral sex, far above the going rate on the streets of Anchorage, and he brought her back to his house. Because that summer, Hansen's family was on a trip to Europe. In fact, this was a regular thing for Hansen's wife and kids, as they usually spent summers down in Arkansas visiting Darla's parents, hence the Summer Project.
This was also their sort of, they would do like a semi-divorce. The two of them were constantly fighting, and she didn't understand, because essentially at this point, Robert Hansen's baking all day and at the fucking topless bars all night and doing this, like being in and out. He's a very, very strange man. Darla knows this, but she's a good Christian woman, doesn't want to divorce him, so she would separate the family as much as possible, and every summer, essentially, it was like a place to go breathe easy and get away from him.
It's crazy. You forget he has a family this whole time.
Yeah. So that night, Hansen took Paulson down to the basement where he kept all of his hunting trophies, handcuffed her, and violently forced her to have sex. After that, he wrapped her neck in a chain, locked it to an eye bolt screwed into one of the support beams, and left her there overnight, surrounded by the heads of his bestial kills. The next day, Hansen came down and told her he was taking her out to his cabin in the woods, but he'd be sure to have her back in Anchorage at around 11 a.m. the next day. Mm. He kept her in handcuffs, put her in his truck, and drove her to Merrill Field, where he kept his plane. But as Hansen was loading the plane up for the trip, Paulson barreled out of the open car door and ran as fast as she could. Hansen gave chase, but a security guard at the airport noticed him, and as soon as Hansen saw that someone was looking, he slowed down to a walk, got in his car, and drove away. When he got home, he removed the eye hook and puttied the hole. Cindy, as we said at the beginning of the last episode, flagged down a truck driver named Robert Yunt and told him to take her to the Big Timber Motel. Now, naturally, he wanted to go to the cops, but when she refused, he dropped her off at the Mush Inn Motel, where she called her pimp to come pick her up. And needless to say, the pimp was pissed.
The pimp was more angry than most cops that listened to the story. He freaked out. Which he was just upset. Like, I'm going to kill this motherfucker.
Yeah,
and got his gun and like ran out looking for this guy that almost killed one of his employees.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He ran. The pimp, whose name is unknown, grabbed his gun and drove to the airport to kill Hansen. But by the time the pimp arrived, Handsome was long gone. Mm.
His name was 47 words, because there's 47 words for snow, and snow is ice cold.
Very true.
But thankfully, the truck driver had gone to the police straight after dropping off Cindy. A detective, coincidentally named Greg Baker, was put on the case, and Cindy identified both Robert Hansen's aircraft and his car almost immediately.
All right. Might get some justice here.
All right, all right. She said a couple of right things first, but let's see how we can make sure she's wrong, boys. Yeah, good work, Baker.
Oh, no.
Well, Hansen was brought in for questioning and went with him, no questions asked, because after all, Hansen had been through this whole song and dance before. He even let the cops search his home, his car, and his Super Cub without a warrant. Hansen's green Buick sedan held rifle cartridges, ace bandages, surgical gloves, and a shitload of Conway Twitty tapes.
I nicknamed my car Guilty because it proves that I'm guilty. Do you get my joke? Good Lord. Conway Twitty, by the way. Let's stop malign Conway Twitty.
We're
here.
Not maligning Conway Twitty. He was also a big Dolly Parton fan.
Well, Dolly's the best. I got into a little bit of a Travis Tritthole the other day.
Oh, got did little, you? Yeah. I don't like Tritthole. I don't like
Travis Tritthole. He has rice cooking in the microwave, so he's a working man. It's a good, great day to be alive. It's a great song.
But the bullets and the bandages in the car were easy enough to explain away, and even the gloves couldn't be connected to the kidnapping. Ugh. Not really. The house, though, was a different story. When cops searched the basement, they found that it was exactly how Cindy had described it, right down to where the foosball table was located.
Of course he had a foosball table.
Now, after the search and the questioning, Hansen was put in a lineup and Cindy immediately picked him without hesitation. But once again, Robert Hansen had an alibi. He had two friends say that he'd been with them all night fixing an airplane seat.
Honestly, it's the weirdest. It's such an Alaskan way to hang out. He said that he spent 4 hours building an airplane seat, and then he went to another guy's house where they continued to work on an airplane seat. If that's not an alibi for murder, they are having gay Alaskan sex.
It's possible.
They could just have. If that was the case, that would have been fine.
Yeah, fixing an airplane seat is a good euphemism for some bear love in Alaska.
Both of these men knew they were lying, but Hansen had asked him to do this as a personal favor to get him out of what he had called, quote, an awkward situation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, awkward. He is so adorkable. No one had said that Robert Hansen's adorkable yet. Got a lot of people, when we posted a picture of Robert Hansen, there's a lot of weird women in our Instagram who said that he's handsome.
I know. I don't like to get into that.
I was very surprised by that.
Yeah,
we're not going to get into that whole thing.
No. It's disturbing.
But then there was the matter of Hansen's criminal record. Because remember, he'd been picked up a few times before, and you'd think the cops would look at the criminal record and be like, holy shit, this guy has done this before. Let's really go at him hard. But the APD was in the process of transferring their records into a new computer system. So when they checked Hansen's name, nothing came up because his record was in the crack in between being transferred from the old system to the new system. So as far as they knew, Robert Hansen's record was 100% clean.
Secretary Debbie, I'm going to read and shout to you what I'm reading on the paper here.
Okay.
And then you type it into the computer.
Okay, that's easy there. Okay. That's real easy.
Gary Coldman, age 48.
Is it Coldman? Coldman?
It's like it's cold in here. And yes. Because I'm in the room, I'm also a cold man.
K.
C.
I.
No.
F.
Anyway.
I never learned to do any of this.
He's 49.
So at this point, the cops started to call Cindy Paulson's credibility into question, and they started asking her to take a polygraph test. Of course, she was insulted. She got pissed off. She refused. She said, you know, if you don't believe me, if you can't take what I've already given you by giving you a full description of the car, the plane, and the basement, plus all the injuries, she's like, I've had enough. I'm getting the fuck out of here. You're not going to believe me, so I'm just going to leave.
She obviously also had a very bad relationship with the police officers. She was a sex worker, and they were constantly at odds, like the two communities, because they just wouldn't let them live in peace, essentially. They couldn't work, and the police officers had no respect for them, and so that's why she couldn't figure out, like she just didn't want to be involved in the investigation.
So the investigation was closed. And that might have been the end of it, giving Robert Hansen permission once more to kill.
So you think if he ended here, no more kills, you think he just skates?
No. Okay. That's not what happened. Okay. Thankfully, Cindy Paulson's case made its way over to the Alaska State Troopers, the true super cops in this story.
Hey, all right.
One of the investigators at the APD, Maxine Farrell, made sure the file landed on the desk of Lyle Hogsfin.
Don't mess with Hogsfin.
This guy.
Hogsfin was the one in charge of the Sherry Morrow case. Remember Sherry Morrow? Her body had been found with one of Hansen's shell casings less than a year before. So Hogsfin started looking into this Hansen fella, especially where Hansen was flying. Problem was, Hansen never reported his real registration numbers to the people in the tower at Merrill Field, so they never really knew where he was going. Because Hansen didn't actually have a pilot's license because he'd been denied one when he did his application a few years before and wrote down that he took lithium for bipolar disorder. So they're like, yeah, we're not giving you an airplane.
Okay. Now, lithium was like an old school way of handling bipolar disorder, right? Or is it still around?
It's still around. I took it briefly.
But it's like it's got very intense side effects, right?
It can, yeah.
Did you try to get a pilot's license while you were on it? It seems like it would be super fun to be hopped up on lithium and fly in a plane.
Oh, you're not hopped up. You're way down.
Oh, it's
you're
down,
way
huh?
down.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're way down. And it makes your penis no work, right?
No, my penis was still fine.
Well, you're very horny.
All right.
No, there was only one medication that made my penis go away.
You know
for
what?
A little
while. Just a segment that we don't even have to have on the show. How
I'm
is Marcus?
Asking. I'm
weird.
Asking questions.
Okay.
Well, how Hansen got around not having a license was that he painted the ID numbers on his plane too small to see from the tower. And when the flight towers are like, breaker, breaker, we can't see the numbers on your plane, Hansen just gave them the numbers of other planes, and the tower was like, all right, sounds good. And the extra stupid thing about this is that Hansen wasn't even bipolar.
Yeah.
He just lied his way into it during one of his many psych evaluations during his prison stays, and he just sort of gone along with it ever since. But I actually think that he flipped this and reversed it to his advantage, because now he had a cover for any sort of strange behavior.
Do you remember when you were a kid? Tell me if anybody else did this, because I was obsessed with having glasses as a little kid, and Jackie said the same thing, and I know a lot of the people had the same thing, where you kind of lie about it because it gives you like a personality. For some reason, when you're searching for something to label yourself as and you have no idea what it is, you start being like, because I thought my braces were cool. I thought it'd be cool to have braces, and then I got them, and then it was the worst 4 years of my fucking life, of which no pictures exist.
Yeah. That is embarrassing.
Well, after a while, the dots started to connect with Robert Hansen. In September of 1983, troopers found the body of Paula Goulding in a location off the Kinnick River that was accessible only by boat or aircraft. Here, they found another .223 shell casing fired from the same gun that had killed Sherry Morrow. And that is when state troopers assigned the Kinnick River murders to the true super cop in this story, Glenn Flothy, a tall, gawky, eternally rumpled man who was just born to be played by Nicolas Cage.
Did you say James Comey or Glenn Flothy?
Glenn Flothy.
Oh, okay.
Well, Flothy's definitely a backup quarterback's name, which is nice. He got to be in the front seat, and he got to do it. Well, Nicolas Cage was technically an amalgam of all of these cops into one man that was supposed to be the bravest man on the force.
But he was called Flothy. Like, he still was Glenn Flothy in the movie, right?
No, he's not Glenn Flothy. It's a made-up name. It's just a guy's name that they just assigned to him. I don't know why they did this. Glenn Flothy was the example of a guy that, like, he nerded his way into being a super cop.
Yeah,
he was the exact coin flip side of Robert Hansen. He was a weird, gawky dude who loved details, and he instinctively, he kind of accidentally found his way into the troopers by essentially testing really well, and they were like, okay, we'll get you in here, and then they found his dogged persistence Persistency is better. Was what made him a great cop. And he's the one who put all of the evidence together for the first time and started seeing what was happening.
Glenn Flothy sounds like a guy who's like, I would have been a singer-songwriter if singing didn't mean that you were possessed by the devil. So I went into the law enforcement field instead, and I have a lot of respect.
Well, Flothy was a true crime nerd that just happened to get into it. Like, he said his interest first started is that his local bar happened to also be the local bar of like a bunch of cops and like investigators. Oh. So he started hanging out with him.
So it literally started with like, I could drink like a cop. If I can drink like a cop, maybe I could just be a cop.
Oh, so you're just to be a cop. You just don't be with your family. Oh, that's great. That's easy. That. Yeah. Well, because Flothy used to go and hang out. And because what do cops love more? I know this for a fact, because family of a cop, they love telling long yarns.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They love finding a new dude that is eager to hear long yarns, because then he's a great companion. And so, and because he didn't talk a lot, he was a great listener.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as Henry said, he was the first one to actually look at the big picture. And he started looking into the numerous sex workers who had been reported missing in the Anchorage area in the few years previous. And when all was said and done, he had a victim matrix of 10 names. Then he started looking into the victims themselves. He found they were all in their 20s, were all between 5'4 and 5'7, were generally busty, had all worked as topless dancers, and had all made high-paying dates with strangers right before they'd gone missing.
Hmm. All right. Flothy is onto something.
Flothy's very much onto something. And
he hit busty 5 times, though. He did. They all say the word busty quite a bit in terms of the women that they describe of Anchorage.
Now, Butcher Baker loves the word busty.
That book was apparently horrible, though, you guys said.
The book's terrible. Yeah, yeah.
Not a good book.
It's got about 6 adjectives all throughout the entire thing, and busty is definitely one of the favorites.
I see.
And then, in mid-September, Flothy and Hogsven joined forces. And from that moment forward, Robert Hansen's fate was sealed.
All right.
See, by this time, the records have been fully transferred over, so the troopers finally knew the full extent of Hansen's past crimes.
All right,
yeah,
Deborah, like, I've got
what?
Deborah, I've got the name Robert Hansen.
Handsome.
We just got to get the name.
I 7.
No. Why would there be a number in his last name?
Can I stop working here?
Now, there were some cops within the APD who felt like the department had completely fucked up on the Cindy Paulson case. It's not like the entire APD was full of bad eggs. Because one of those guys, Greg Baker, he was appalled at how the APD had handled it.
Right.
So he joined forces with the other two guys, with Flothy and Hogsven, and the trio went after Hansen hard.
I'm also going to say, if you listen to footage of Greg Baker talking about Cindy Paulson, he is in love with her.
Yeah.
And I have a whole side plot in my own mind. There's no evidence for it. But Greg Baker, if you watch any of these documentaries, the way he talks about Cindy Paulson was like, she was just a lass that needed a prince to fight the dragon. And he went out there. He was obsessed with Cindy Paulson. He went out of his way and talked with her about the case and was talking with her on the side. And he was like, I could get you a nice little apartment. Like doing like very getting really into it. And he sort of looks like me if I was a cop. So I can see there was actually a really cute love story in there. Also could have been done by Nick Cage. Like in the movie, Lotto movie.
The Lotto movie? Captain Corelli's Mandolin?
That's the World War II Italian Mandolin movie. There's another one movie called Lotto. You Can't Take It With You. You Leave Everything to Me, or like You Can't Take It With You, or Everything Has Its Place. It's like it's him. It's a blonde lady who's busty. That is true. He had a Lotto ticket, and he split it with the waitress, and he's
the
cop.
What's the name of that movie? Lucky Number One or something like that, or I'm Your
Live
Guy.
And Let Live.
Lotto.
It could happen to you.
It could happen to you. Was it sponsored by the New York State Lottery Commission?
And he plays a police officer.
He plays so many police officers. For a man who's been arrested, he understands how cops work.
I know how to do this.
Well, since it had been months since the original investigation, Cindy had been in the wind. But
due to the diligent efforts of a vice cop known only as Gentile, the troopers found Cindy and convinced her that they were finally going to take down Robert Hansen.
Take him down.
Hello, Cindy. My name is Officer Gentile. Would you like a monogrammed handkerchief?
I would.
Then I will solve your murder. Very good. Very good. You pass the test.
All right.
Now, the cops kept an eye on Robert Hansen from then on. Although the way Greg Baker talks about the surveillance, it makes the whole thing seem just like confusingly weird. This Greg Baker, he's a weird guy. Like, listen to this interview of him talking about the surveillance.
One morning I was driving by and I needed to get some donuts for the shift. Mr. Hansen was there and he had a window that he stood in and decorated cakes and cupcakes and cookies. And I remember watching him. He kept looking up at me, and you could tell he was nervous. And he kept putting frosting on his thumb. And I liked that.
Do we know he's not a cartoon bear?
He looks like a cartoon bear.
He sounds like a cartoon bear. He is a cartoon bear.
I needed to get donuts for the meeting. I had to, because if not, the way we would beat each other with our batons. But then he'd put it all on his finger, and I was like, that's a treat. It makes a finger of cupcake, and then you think maybe people are just cupcakes walking around. You're just like, cut them open.
You've lost your sense of humanity.
But what the cops really needed more than anything else was to get into Hansen's house. What they needed was that Mini 14. However, they couldn't get a search warrant based on Cindy Paulson's word because Hansen had an alibi. So Flothy threw a Hail Mary, and a pretty damn resourceful and forward-thinking one at that. Flothy called up the FBI Behavioral Sciences Unit in Quantico and asked for their help. Now, it's hard to know exactly who to give credit to on this one. The book, Butcher Baker, says the guy who cracked it, or at least was a major part of it, was Roy Hazelwood, one of the founders of the program. But Mindhunter, by John Douglas, gives all the credit to who else but John Douglas.
I mean, he wrote the book.
Right.
Now, this is one thing I've found again and again throughout all the years we've been spending studying serial killers. John Douglas really likes to take credit for shit he may or may not have done. More than once, I've read a source that names another person in the BSI as being the main contact, but when I cross-reference that with Mindhunter or one of his other books, it's a lot of I, me, me, me.
Well, it's easy to tell the story. They are calling from his offices. So, and then if you're the commanding officer, right? Was he the commanding officer?
I believe so.
I think you take all the credit, right? Essentially, because it's like my people did it.
No,
so it's like I did
it. No, no, no. He makes it sound like specifically he did it all.
I do love the idea of Marcus cross-referencing, and then being like, and finally, I've concluded it is Whopper Wednesday. It is indeed a Whopper Wednesday. I have circled it, note the W for Wednesday.
Douglas, he may have done this with the permission of these other agents who may have not wanted to or not cared to be in the book, or he may have just been doing it to simplify the narrative at the request of the author. That happens sometimes. But just remember, while John Douglas is brilliant, talented, and one of the reasons why serial killers aren't as prevalent as they once were, he also isn't necessarily the one-man superbrain powerhouse that he claims to be.
Okay.
Yeah, he's no Beck.
Ooh, Beck, Scientologist, I believe.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna go see Beck at Madison Square Garden here pretty soon.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Cool. Very good interview. He's indoctrinated, and he loves yelling at ashtrays, and we can't take that from him.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah. Lifelong Scientologist. Yep. But, I mean, he was born into it, so you can't really blame him. But
can't blame him.
You know what? I don't care.
Could have gotten out. Well, yeah, sure.
Well, either way, Detective Flothy called up Quantico and asked for their help in putting together something to juice up a search warrant, which had never actually been done before by the BSI or anyone else. They'd never used a profile to get a search warrant. And here's where things get really interesting. Flothy described both the murders and the kidnappings to the FBI agent, whoever it was. And just from that, the FBI came up with this profile.
Dude, it is fucking, like, I don't know how they did this shit. Like, I want to go back. I have to read this section in Mindhunter and really, like, go into how they break this down. But they fucking nailed it.
Really? Yeah. A unique time? Usually they don't.
They said the suspect likely had a speech impediment of some kind, probably a stutter, and probably had skin problems as a teenager. Hmm. They said he is an exceptional hunter, and while he is married, his wife is probably religious and is completely oblivious to her husband's wrongdoings. They said he was probably a successful businessman and an upstanding member of the community, and as far as the MO went, he probably had a murder bag complete with disguises, and he probably took trophies.
Wow.
And he probably played a lawful good maid in any sort of campaign, because he's one of those guys who does all the boring abilities, like being a healer or being a pyro guy who attacks the first wave of enemies from afar.
Hey, all right.
Yeah, and fucking this profile, I mean, it blew Flothy's hair right the fuck back. Wow. He couldn't.
I love that. I just love that fucking term.
I can feel my cholesterol getting higher and higher. I'm so excited.
And there were other things coming in as well. The troopers had started to compare tire marks outside and near the remote cabins that had been burgled and compared them to the tires on Hansen's plane and found that they were a match, because Hansen was the only guy in the area that had a plane with those types of tires.
Wow. So essentially, the net is slowly circling. Robert Hansen's getting more and more nervous, becoming more and more like Mr. Bean in the fucking bakery, knocking over muffins. Like, those are really like, oh, Robert's never been clumsy with the croissants before. And he's just like, it's fine. It's just going to be Bastille Day soon. And we need to make sure there's enough croissants for the parade.
Oh, my goodness.
Then, finally, a woman recognized Hansen when she went into his bakery to apply for a job. And so she came forward. And with that, the burglaries and the profile, the search warrant for Hansen's house was finally granted.
All right.
After searching all day, one of the cops, a Lieutenant Kasnick, climbed into the attic to sift through the fiberglass insulation in a last-ditch effort to find the murder weapon. Because they'd searched this whole goddamn house and hadn't found anything.
Well, that was also a part of how his alibi fell apart, too. So the cops all showed up. They picked him up at the bakery. He came in a little bit late. He had his fucking baker's hat on. They arrested him. They put it into a thing, and he knew what was happening. The wife was home. This bunch of cops showed up. They raided the whole house. She has no idea what's going on. The wife of his neighbor rolls over and says, what are you guys doing? They're like, oh, Robert Hansen's being booked for murder. Like, she just told this woman, because I guess it's fucking Anchorage, and she's like, oh, yeah, my husband never hangs out with him. Anything that he says to you is a lie. And so he just threw her husband under the bus, just being like, fuck this. Like, what is happening here?
Wow.
And the husband was out, like, doing a job, because he was a contractor who also, like, built boats on the side. And it actually built a boat for Robert Hansen. Hmm. He was up in King Salmon working another job. And his wife's calling him up and saying, oh, you need to get the fuck home, and you need to clear this up. Right now. And he's like, I'm not coming home. I'm working a job. I'm providing for this family. If they get an affidavit, then yeah, I'll come home, but I'm not coming home before then. And so the cops, in the last possible place they could look in the house, in the back corner of the attic, they found the treasure chest.
Ooh.
And a hollowed out cache. Cops found Sherry Morrow's arrowhead necklace, a pistol, a .522 rifle, and the coveted .223 caliber Mini 14.
Nice.
Finally, the cops had in their possession hard evidence that tied Hansen to at least two of the murders.
I was really hoping it would have been a cake in the shape of a Mini 14, and then they cut into it and it is the Mini 14. Hiding in plain sight.
But the best part about this is that now I don't have to go get donuts for the meeting.
Yeah, we gotta eat around the evidence.
But the most disturbing discovery was still to come. In that box, cops also found a map of the Anchorage area marked up with a whole bunch of X's. Now, at this time, Hansen was only attached to four murders in the area. And when
quite a bit.
Comparatively only. Yes. And when cops cross-referenced where those bodies were found to the map, they saw that there was an X on each one of those locations. But those four weren't the only X's. Over the entire map, there were 20 more.
Jeez.
Each one seemingly corresponding to the gravesites of then unknown victims. But a lot of those victims corresponded with Flothy's victim matrix.
Ooh.
And that's when the bottom fell out of the alibi as well. The guy finally came back home, and the cops told both of them, because there were two guys that were in on this alibi. They told both of them, it's like, listen, you're going to be summoned to a grand jury. You lie to us, it's no big deal.
Never
you
seen
lie to
Robert
them.
Hansen before in my life. Never needed gun. We've never hung out. I've never bought a donut. He's a murderer. He's a fucking murderer.
Oh, they washed their hands of him as fast as they could. Once it came out, it's like, oh, we found a lot of evidence of murder. You're going to be grand jury. Yes. You lie to them. It's going to be perjury, and you're going to do a hard time. So they're just like, nah.
Detective Flothy, I don't even know how to put together an airplane seat. I never even saw a seat.
I don't sit in chairs. I stand. The human body is actually not built to sit. If you look at diagrams from Eastern Asian philosophies, they believe that squatting and lying down is the only way for a human to rest. But also, this is the power of free baked goods. Remember this again. All of this happened because no one wanted to ruin their connection to the good bakery.
Wow.
And so on February 16th, 1984, Hansen's attorneys called the prosecution and told them that Hansen was ready to, quote, clear the decks.
All right.
Just as it had been with the great bus barn caper back in Iowa, Robert Hansen offered to plead guilty and confess just so long as his family was spared the publicity of being attached to the worst serial killer in Alaskan history.
What if I just plead guilty to burning down the bus barn again? Can I
do
that?
I burned down the bus barn. I don't know what else I'm supposed to say about it, okay?
The murders.
I stole a belt. No, not the belt. No, is that what you want to hear?
No, the murders. Really, that's the sticking point here.
Well, in exchange for all that, Hansen gave investigators bodies. And goddamn, does it sound like he was creepy when he did it.
Oh, God.
Hansen was taken out to each specific spot on his map by helicopter and was told to show the troopers at least approximate spots. But when they let Hansen loose, they found that he was amazingly agile moving through the wilderness, making it hard for them to even keep up.
It's almost like he was trying to escape.
Well, no, they had a trooper out there with a very high-powered rifle pointed at him at all times. Ready to shoot him down if he tried. Now, Hansen would bound through the snow on the way to each burial site like a dog. And when he found the site, he'd get down on his hands and knees and start digging in the snow with his tiny little paws.
Oh,
there's obviously a disconnection inside of himself from any sort of like human behavior. Like there's like a thing inside where he became excited because he took it all like, it's very similar to Henry Lee Lucas when they went out to go looking for all the bodies and they treated it like it was a fucking party where he was walking out there and it was fun for him. He's joking around. He's like, oh, I know all of this places. With, oh yeah, I'm out here all the time. They're like, yeah, buddy, we found a map with 27 fucking X's on it of bodies we put out here. We Jesus. Know you're aware of the territory.
Well, since it was February, though, the ground was too frozen to dig.
Whoa!
I get it.
That's
frozen
it
ground.
From.
Wow.
Oh, I wondered why in the movie they never did that, where the guy with the shovel just hit a bunch of ground, being like, do you know what it is? The guy like nods for 2 minutes. Just like,
is it the title of this shitty movie that we're in?
So since the ground was frozen, the cops marked each spot by spray painting nearby trees. And when they came back in the spring to those marked spots after the ground had thawed, they found that Hansen had picked the exact right spot every time. And each body was found by digging only one hole. And on that day alone, Hansen led them to 12 bodies, some in locations that he hadn't been to in over 2 years. Then, after a hell of a lot of hemming and hawing for some reason, Pope and Young revoked all of Hansen's hunting records.
Well, you're going to tell us that he didn't hunt them? That he didn't kill the 34th largest black bear in the competition? Because it's a fact. It is a fact. You're going to make us deny it?
Wow. That must have hit home for Hansen, having all of the records expunged.
And so on February 27th, 1984, Robert Hansen was sentenced to 461 years in prison plus life. When asked what he was going to do in prison, he said,
I want to become a writer. What I plan to do is get experience by writing humorous stories. Then I'll write my own story. The story of a man who loses his wife and has to move in with two of his silly cousins and the cute kids all. And you know that house, it was so packed. It was like a, it was full of laughter and love and learning.
Oh my, this guy.
But it wasn't to be, as Hansen spent most of his time as a prison barber.
Oh.
Now we have a little bit of inside information here. One of our listeners apparently had a shitty cousin who did some time in Seward Correctional with Hansen. The shitty cousin said that all the prisoners considered Hansen just a sweet old man that they all referred to as Grandpa Bob.
Oh, yeah, he was really sweet. What a sweet old man.
So finally, just a few years ago, on August 21st, 2014, Robert Hansen died of natural causes, still married to Darla, who never moved on after the heartbreak of unknowingly being married to the worst serial killer the Great White North has ever seen.
Wow, she stayed married to him.
I mean, it could be a whole Christianity thing. Maybe. Where it's like you never divorce, no matter what.
All right. Well, there it is, the story of Robert Hansen. You know, we don't even need the hunting aspect of it. The story itself is interesting.
Yeah, the story itself is interesting and creepy as fuck. Yeah. And I also want to give a huge thanks to research assistant Annie Powers, who is invaluable in putting together all the information and misinformation on Robert Hansen. And speaking of Annie and things that she's helping us out with, as far as research goes, we got a big announcement.
Are we doing the big announcement?
We're doing the big announcement. Fall of 2019, the last book on the left, Serial Killers.
We're writing a book.
We are writing a book. We are, and I'm going to tell you what.
I got new shoes for it.
He did.
I got my socks. I got my writing book socks.
I got that, like, you know those wooden bead covers you put on a car chair? To make the car seat to make it feel car chair. What am I?
Car chair. Yeah, no, that's right.
But it's like, I got that for my writing seat here so that I'm extra comfortable when struggling.
Yes.
Because of what I will say, it is foreign and difficult to write a book.
I'm getting used to, like, ugh, saying that.
It's not good enough. But it is kind of fun, though, is that I get to, every once in a while, like, I'll go and I'll just type in a whole page of all work and no day make Henry go crazy. Like, I do the shining thing and it's fun.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've got new soft pads for my chair's armrests.
Very nice. You should get a gel thing for your mouse pad.
I'm going to have to actually get a gel
Carpal
thing.
Tunnel.
I'm having to get a gel thing for my keyboard.
Cool.
Because, yeah, we're writing it right now. We're looking for an illustrator, you know, like a comic book artist to work out all, because it's going to be pretty illustration heavy, like kind of a Mad Magazine type of thing. So we're still looking for a guy or a gal right now, but we'll announce that once we find him.
Absolutely. We are putting our stamp on the world of serial killers, and it will never come off.
It'll be a
and that's the fun part.
Yep, it'll be a serial killer book. It should be a. Yep. It'll be we're trying. It's interesting trying to transition the podcast into book form.
So
it's a learning process, and so thank you all so much for making that possible. Without you, and the community, we wouldn't be having this opportunity. And so thanks everyone who's given to the Patreon, and just everyone.
I also want to give some thank yous to some people who have sent us some cool stuff in the mail.
Oh my god, that beef jerky!
Oh, the beef jerky! We got to say a thank you first of all.
Oh my
Let's hear Lynn Hoagland, who sent us some amazing beef jerky that
very
we
good.
Fucking destroyed. I'm putting off getting into the weapons grade stuff that you sent, but I'm saving that for a special occasion.
Such good jerky!
Thank you. I would like to thank Danger and Mayhem Designs, Elise over there, for making us some really awesome handmade jewelry. She made a little pin for Travis that's like a name tag, and it says, "Hello, my name is Titties."
Oh, that's I'm sure Travis is so happy that nickname that Henry gave him stuck.
I also want to thank a listener out of Anchorage, actually, a guy named Dan, who sent us a copy of Butcher Baker, actually, while we were in the middle of recording it. And he has a few, he wrote wrote a fantastic letter, and he has a few questions for us. So first he asked me, Mr. Parks, in your opinion, what is the best recorded drum solo in the history of rock and or roll?
Uh-oh.
I'm going to say Jump in the Fire by Harry Nilsson because it fits into the song perfectly, actually adds to it, and does not bog it down.
Wow. Intergata Davida.
No, no, no.
I like Henry's idea. Intergata Davida, baby. I don't know what it means.
It goes on too long, and it's just, you know, it's masturbatory. But in Jump in the Fire, Jump in the Fire, it's an actual part of the song that actually adds to it and fucking and segues into that awesome bass line that boo doo 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 doo.
But what, Led Zeppelin, Black Dog?
That's a pretty good one, too. But nope, Jump in the Fire.
Come on!
All right. Most controversial thing that's ever been discussed here.
Mr. Zabrowski, if you could party for one night with any serial killer from history, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, serial killers, they're always the weird ones. The serial killers are hard to hang out with. They're not as fun. I guess technically it would have to be Charles Ng.
Wow.
And finally, Mr. Kissel, if you had to kiss one part of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's body, what would it be? Follow-up question, would you kiss it light and teasingly or with the unbridled passion of a young lover's heart?
Oh my God. I think I would have to kiss his neck with a lot of passion to turn him back into a turtle. That's what I would do.
And finally, we would like to say thanks Serial Saints over at serialsaints.com for making prayer candles out of the three of us and for doing that wonderful portrait of Wendy as a saint.
Thank you so much. I want that picture for my home.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you all so much for everything. That is such a... Those candles are great.
Yeah, they're awesome.
They're really cute.
Up here in the studio.
So, let's see. Do we have a shirt that we want to talk about, too?
We
have the new Hungry Ghost Press shirt, yes, which I believe sold out immediately.
That shirt is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, it sold out immediately, but everybody who still wants to grab that shirt, we have another print run coming up because they did both shirts and awesome poster prints.
Yeah.
But they're working on new ones right now, so we think we're going to have more here in like a month or so.
Cool.
So, just keep...
posters.
Yeah, just follow, you know, keep looking at our Twitter to see when those are back in stock, or just go to Hungry Ghost Press. I think it's hungryghostpress.com to check out all of their stuff. I love Hungry Ghost. I've got like, you know, three of their pieces of art up in my house. You know, we've got some Hungry Ghost stuff here in the studio. We love what they do. So please support Hungry Ghost Press.
All right.
So follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Fantasy, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one.
Yes.
And follow us on all of the horseshit at LP on the left.
That's it. And keep on supporting all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. We got a lot of fun stuff. Every show is great. So just check it out. I know some people were emailing saying they're all done with Last Podcast and what other things. Just peruse the site. Top Hat for Politics, Page 7 Entertainment, Movie Sign with the Mads. We got Frank and Trace from Movie Sign. What was it?
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
They're funny. That's what I say. So hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Hail me now.
Magustalations.